Look-alike, a Stranger Things supernatural crossover, written by Paper Faith and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and is Gen, with additional tags for prompt fic, crossover, Steve Harrington has powers, alternate universe, angels and demons, human experimentation, angsty, hopeful ending, Big Brother Steve. I have literally no idea how to tag this. Rena made me do it! I haven't said that in far too long. Demonic Possession. And was written as part of Wishlist 2023. Author's Notes. Prompt. Rena Jenkins. Stranger Things Supernatural. Henry Creel was one of Azazels. The others are derived from his blood, and so L is accidentally demonic. I have yet to write anything Stranger Things that isn't somehow Steve-centric, even if Steve is not the point of the story. He steals the show, and he did it again here. I hope you enjoy this anyway, even though it feels more like the beginning of an epic story than a finished small one. Sorry. Love ya!
Tell me now of the very soul. Look alike, do you know the stranglehold covering their eyes? If I call on every soul.
Steve Harrington is not important. Steve Harrington has worked very hard to not be important. He found this body, this identity, little Steven, when it was 3 years old and took a tumble off a tall tree because the parents were never around and the nanny was busy chatting to her boyfriend on the kitchen landline. Steven fell, and the thing that now calls itself Steve moved into his broken, dying body. By the time the nanny found him, he was all healed, except for the knees and the palms, and if she noticed that he suddenly acted quite differently, well, it wasn't like she really cared. And also, she got replaced within 6 months. He doesn't intend to stay Steve for so long. Usually, a few years is all he gets before something makes him move on. Someone always notices something off about him, or one of his brethren moves into the neighborhood and he leaves preemptively, always afraid of discovery. Sometimes he gets discovered and has to cower and quiver until he can run. He wants nothing to do with his old home, thanks quite a lot. But Steve's parents are never home, and the staff have a ridiculous turnover, and his so-called friends never looked any closer than they had to. And so he's been here for well over a decade at this point. He had a close call a few years ago, one of the bigwigs marching down Main Street, but she disappeared again quickly. Even monsters find Hawkins, Indiana, boring. There's enough wickedness here to keep a demon comfortable, but it's all so mundane, so small. Cheating on spouses, hitting children, racism, chauvinism, sexism, Bible-thumping hate speech. It's boring. Steve loves it. It's the closest he has felt to humanity since Hellfire shredded him whole and devoured the pieces. So when the monsters appear in Hawkins, along with flickering lights and a bunch of dead people, he grits his teeth against the urge to run again, and decides to look and see first. And what he finds is hell, yes, of course, but it is very much not hell. So he grabs the bat Jonathan throws him, and he beats up something that still isn't half as scary as a hellhound come to feast on your soul flesh, and survives. He stays. After, there are suddenly a bunch of kids around, and Steve isn't quite sure how that happened, but somehow it did. Does keep happening? Children around him. It's only a little ridiculous. Even when the body he occupied was a child, most children didn't want to hang around him. No matter how far he is from hell, or how hard he tries, something always lingers. It's not a scent or a taste, anything tangible. Just a general feeling of wrongness. It's the kind of thing that makes the small hairs on the nape of your neck stand on end for no reason. And children, not yet trained to ignore their instincts, to value societal constraints over gut reaction, usually sense that. The ones who get close to him are either idiots or have a little bit of that wrongness themselves. Until these children, anyway. He thinks that perhaps the trauma broke them a little. Just enough for them to ignore the warning bells. Either way, he enjoys their company. And they tell and retell endlessly the story of their friend Elle and how she saved them all. They talk about her hair and her button nose and how it bleeds whenever she uses her powers, of her tattoo and egos and friends don't lie. And it's clear from the way they talk about her that they love her, try to keep every detail of her alive. But not once, not fucking once during an entire goddamn year of chewing Steve's ear off about her, did any of them ever think to mention that her eyes turn fucking yellow when she uses her powers. She blows into the buyer's house, flinging demodogs around like rag dolls with nothing but her mind, and her eyes glow a brilliant acid yellow, and Steve's heart stops. He needs to get out. He needs to get the fuck away from cute little Elle with her world-rending powers and her yellow eyes. Except Steve is an idiot who has gotten attached to a whole bunch of dumb fucking children somehow, and he can't, can he? He can't just leave. So he lets Billy Hargrove smash his face in, still too concussed by Elle's existence to fight back properly. And when the plate shatters against his head and something in his brain goes very silent and then very red and he's dead for a few seconds, he just lies there, healing the body as he goes and thinks about all the ways he will actually die tonight. Not physically. A brain hemorrhage is small fry to heal. But actually die. Because there is a little girl wandering around this town with yellow eyes. And if she won't end him, then her daddy certainly will. Except she doesn't. He doesn't. No one does. No one tries to murder Steve any more than usual. And in the end, they all survive lowercase h hell for the second time. And it's fine. It's fine. It's so fine, he might actually start to sleep again in a month or two. Maybe. Of course, that's when the doorbell rings. And on the other side, yeah, no, he's dead. "Oh," he says, very evenly, "because if hell teaches you anything, it's to front like a motherfucker in a crisis." Every second in hell is a crisis. He's so tired of it. "Steve," she replies, imitating his tone and cadence perfectly. She ruins it by giving a little giggle at the end, amused at her own joke. Like an actual child. "May I come in, please?" Someone taught her that, didn't they? The same way someone once... No. "Yeah, sure. Soda?" Why is he offering her a drink? "Yes, please." She smiles again, pleased by a protocol she knows how to follow. He feels a swell of pity under the fear, and tries to smother it. They sit on the back deck, where Barb once died bloody, and Steve can still smell it. The psychic residue of a bad, bad death. Elle fiddles with her soda can for a long time. Then she says, blunt as ever, "You are not like the others." Steve says nothing. "The others, in my mind, I can feel them. They're like little smooth stone in a river. Pebbles?" "Yes, like pebbles. You are not a pebble. You are bigger. And all your edges are sharp, and you are dangerous. But you try very hard not to cut anyone. And it hurts." She pauses, seems to parse her own words again. "Yes, the shape of you hurts. You feel like..." Steve forces his heart to keep breathing, and his lungs to keep working, and asks, "Like what?" "Like one."
"What?"
She pulls up her sleeve, taps the little numeral on her forearm. "One," she repeats, and then adds, "All the numbers were a bit like him. Pebbles, but with edges. Half and half. One was not a pebble. You are not a pebble. Are you like one?" He tries, for a moment, to imagine the old goat as a lab rat, shaved head and cruel science. He enjoys pain, old Yeller does, but not his own. "No, so... one, did he feel bigger or smaller than me?" She blinks at him, and for a second, just a split second, there is gold in her eyes again, and he tastes copper and hellfire on the back of his tongue. "Smaller. Much smaller, but sharper?" "A child, then. A chosen. But just the one," he thinks, "and all the others are echoes. Copies, maybe? In this new age of science and knowledge. Not ghosts, but clones. So Elle is not, and yet she is, blood of the blood of the blood that he once called brother before the darkness, before the fall." He studies Elle for a long time then, and she lets him, too used to being observed and dissected. In the end, he decides two things. One, there is no room in her world for angels and demons and religion. Two, she has been lied to enough. In between those two things is her answer. I have a theory. I can't prove it. Want to hear? She considers his words carefully. Choice, he thinks, is still a gift to her. Yes, she finally decides. It's a secret, though. Friends don't lie. It's not a lie. It's just something you can't tell anyone. People might die if you do. Again, she considers. Yes, secret. Friends don't lie, so he tells her. I'm not human. Lab rat or not, the little monster has a hell of a deadpan duh expression. I'm not human, and there are others like me. One of them likes to choose special children and give them his blood to make them even more special, to make them stronger. He does things to them that make them wrong. He thinks he could explain it to her. The old goat's search for the perfect soldier. The battles, the grooming, and the dying. And she would understand. There are certain things. Things about blood and crowns and violence that come with eyes like these. A knowledge deeper than skin and bone. That doesn't mean she needs to know. I think one was one of those children. And somehow the other numbers, like you, were made from him. You have a little bit of what he had, but not a lot. It's enough to make you the way you are. And it's enough to turn your eyes yellow when you use your power. Because of the one who is like you? Yes. He's bad? Yes. If you ever meet someone with yellow eyes who feels like me, Elle, I want you to run. Don't hesitate, just run, okay? He is much, much stronger than you, and he will hurt you for fun. He has never allowed his chosen to have children. Or killed them early when they did. Never had any interest in diluted blood. But a lab full of tortured, broken children? Steve suspects he might like that. Might even enjoy it. I'm bad? Asks the human experiment of the demon. As if he hasn't been asking himself that same question for 6,000 years. As if he hasn't. I don't think bad is something you are, he tells her in the end. After staring at the pool, at the smear of Barb's psychic death, at something beyond both of those things. Bad is something you do. And you don't do bad, Elle. You do good. For the next few minutes, neither of them says anything. Until, are you bad? Well, that's a fair question, isn't it? And of course, Elle would ask it. No one has taught her not to, and, well, friends don't lie. I was good once, he tells the pool, the trees, the ghost of a girl he didn't care about enough to save. And then I was bad. Then when I didn't want to be that anymore, I ran away. Oh, that's not... She's missing words again. She makes shapes with her hands, knots her fingers together, flutters them, all tangled and wishy-washy. Yes. Clear cut? No, these things rarely are. His smile is bitter and ugly, and he can't help it. Not until she puts down her can, twists in her seat, and presses a hand against his chest. And hell, when was the last time someone touched him knowing what he was? It's almost enough to stop his heart. Again. You try not to cut. I think you do good. It shouldn't really mean much, coming from a little imp of a barely demon. A human child with a drop of demon essence inside of her. Just enough to make her tingle down his spine when she really gets going. A little slip of a thing that will die within a few decades and leave nothing but ashes behind. Instead, it means the world. He puts his hand over hers, and oh, he can feel her more clearly now. Skin on skin, that tiny sliver of her that is other, and the way it zings down his arm and into his chest is... For the first time in a very long time, he allows himself to think this. They were angels once. And perhaps, in diluting the blood again and again, perhaps in pitching it against that spark of divinity all humans carry more than once, a little bit of that has bled through again. They sit there, holding hands, for a long time. Eventually, Steve drives her home to Hopper, who is pacing like a caged tiger until he has her back in his sights.
Where the hell have you been, kiddo?
Gruff and anxious. Steve's, she answers bluntly. He's going to help me with my powers.
And that's not what they agreed at all, and also not in the spirit of secret keeping.
But Steve realizes, even as she says it, that he will. Because she's the one asking. Hopper's eyes snap to him with sudden focus.
Are you...
Preemptively, Steve rolls up his sleeve, showing off a bare forearm. No.
Then what?
I'm something far worse, he thinks. Jagged. Not cunning, Elle informs her father. Hop sighs, shakes his head.
Gives up, at least for the moment.
It'll come back to bite Steve in the ass later, but for now, it's settled.
All right, kid. Not like I could stop you. But be careful, you hear?
She nods, solemn and small, and Steve waits until she's gone inside to tell the other man.
I'll keep her safe.
He could just mean government agencies and demodogs.
He doesn't. Hopper nods, and then, carefully, shuts the door on his face. And for the first time in eons, the thing that lives inside Stephen Andrew Harrington's body like a coward, hiding from both heaven and hell, thinks it might have a reason to stay. The end.
It was swift, it was just another wave of a miracle. But no one, nothing at all, will go for the kill. If they called on every soul in the land on the moon, only them would they know a blessing in disguise.
Arthur's nuts. I have always found it weird that in supernatural canon mythology, Lucifer was the only fallen angel around. Even incorporating their own mythology of how demons are made, there was room in the internal logic of it all to have the upper echelons of hell be fallen angels. So, there we go. Lord of Hell, Fallen Angel Steve. Because why not?
Reader's notes. I love this.
It's amazing. I did kicky feet of joy and also clapping and also, like, kicked it to my roommate immediately and was like, you need this right now. And she was like, damn you. And also, like, literally the finally we are reunited once again, running in the same fanish circles as Paper Faith feels so good. And the fact that Rena made me do it is in the tag. Again, it's been a hot minute. I feel so amazed and blown away by the way this world building works so well together. I do want to point out, from an external perspective, the parallels between Eddie Munson's I Always Run and Demon Steve's I've Been Running for Centuries gives me heartburn. Because, like, heartwarming similarities, but also the burning implication of where the narrative might end if Demon Steve is mirroring Eddie's storyline. Was a comment I left on this fic. And then Paper Faith responded with, God, no, I had not yet thought about the implications of Steve mirroring Eddie's plotline yet. Thanks for that heartache. I was more thinking in the direction of, by the time Supernatural starts, the party would be in their 30s, and Elle, all grown up, would absolutely rip season 2 apart just to fuck up old Yellow Eyes, and Steve would help. Demonic demon slaying super buddies. It's a buddy cop show. And I just... this is amazing. This is incredible. This is... the showdown at Cold Oak would never happen. Because Elle and Steve and, I don't know, the rest of the entire Stranger Kids who are now strange adults, just, you know, they grow up weird, obviously. Like... somehow there's, you know, fingers on the pulse, fingers in the pipeline that they know what's going down, and Elle and Steve are going to show up and give each and every one of the special kids, like, just enough of a spanking that they go home. So there never will be a showdown. And old Yellow Eyes is going to suffer for it, and it's going to be amazing. Also, just imagine the entirety of, like, the Winchester's childhood of John Winchester hunting old Yellow Eyes. But he's also, like, sort of just two steps behind Steve and Elle. So, oh, you want to be angsty. Like, hilarious version is John Winchester thinks he's coming up on, like, the thing that killed his wife. And he's going to get his revenge. And he always shows up 2 minutes too late. And he sees, like, bagel crumbs and coffee ring on the table of wherever he thought it was going to be. Hilarious. Frustrating. John Winchester keeps getting cock-blocked by some other demon slayer. Funny. Fantastic. Hurtful version. John Winchester starts to think that Elle and or Steve is the current host of Old Yellow Eyes. And so instead of hunting off actual Azazel, he diverts and starts trying to hunt them, and something tragic happens. Obvi. Possibly Steve has to leave Steve Meat Puppet Steve behind and is just demon essence Smoky Steve at some point. Maybe he's riding in the body with Elle until they can get back along. We're gonna have so much fun with the supernatural canon shenanigans. Once again, Paper Faith, I love your brain. Thank you so much for taking my spitballing and making it the most amazing trauma. And to everyone else listening, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Have a nice day.